Oh, I wouldn't say it's enough. I think that Avi has made what we've seen in the immediate, at the convention, right after the convention. I think it's positive. His rhetoric has been positive. The fact there was a Palestinian flag on the stage. If you look at the NDP's history of aligning with and or Zionism or Israel, I wouldn't say it's enough, but I think it's positive. And you're absolutely correct that there is a meltdown among hardline genocidal Jewish supremacist organizations and activists. They are absolutely unhappy with Avi's victory. I think if Heather McPherson would have won, they might have put out some criticism, but it would have been much more muted because they know that Heather McPherson, while she's developed some kind of credibility on the Palestine file as the foreign affairs critic over the past 2 years, she is very much the establishment and would have been far easier for the pro-Zionist groups to pressure. The fact that Avi's Jewish provides him a little bit of added kind of cover for the anti-Semitism smears that are, invariably come. But yeah, so I think obviously Avi's victory is the best of the options that were on the table, and it's not just that he won by a large margin, but also that the non-establishment slate for the table officers, the executive of the Federal Council, Avi's people won those positions, so he has the mandate and the capacity internally to pursue his agenda, both in terms of getting rid of these odious vetting process that has blocked so many pro-Palestinian candidates over the past 20 years, and reforming the structure of the party to give more power to electoral district associations. He has that capacity internally. And whether they follow through, I think that's going to be a matter of whether the people, the activists, the leftists who supported Avi, whether they treat him as I don't know, some sort of a superstar, or if they treat him as a politician. And if they treat him as a politician and start pressuring him from the left, I think there's a pretty big upside with Avi's leadership in the party.
Well, Eve, now, how much of that restructuring of the NDP backroom can you and your campaign take credit for?
Well, I think we can take credit for. I think it's possible that we helped Avi's executive slate defeat the establishment slate. So the establishment always wins at the conventions. Like I talking to people who've been there for one person 50 plus years, and other mostly Manitoba conventions 30 plus years, and she told me never seen the establishment slate not win. And the Barry Wise leader, who'd been 50 plus years federal, mostly federal and Ontario conventions, he said he could reference, was it one or two examples where one candidate won one of the positions? So it really is the norm. Now, Avi is not exactly outside of the NDP establishment. He's not like completely off of, he has a foot kind of in both doors, if you like. But I think the criticism of the vetting and criticisms of Lucy Watson and criticism of the Federal Council that we did that came out of our campaign, it wouldn't surprise me if that helped Avi's people win. And there was just a sense that we have to get rid of the current the incumbents, because it's been such a disaster in terms of vetting and local democracy. I think we contributed to pushing the debate over the whole debate within not just Avi's campaign, but Heather McPherson and others pushed it to the left. But yeah, so I don't know how it's hard to assess how much, credit we can get for different dynamics. I have to say that I'm pretty confident if they would have let us in the race formally, the third place candidate won 5,100 or so votes. I think I would have, if they would have let me in right at the get-go, I could have got more than that. So I think I could have very well ended up third place. If because I think there are, I don't think winning was ever really a realistic scenario, but I think there were thousands and thousands of people who would have joined the NDP to vote for me, and I think probably a certain number of them did and voted for Avi. And then there's some people who voted for Avi that would have voted for me. So I think getting third place was realistic, and I think the NDP establishment sort of knows that. And that's why they're so threatened. They would not have wanted me on that stage making a speech to the whole convention that a fair bit of media covered, and they obviously didn't want me part of the different debates all the way along the process. But yeah, it's hard to know exactly what the gauge the elements. What to me is absolutely crystal clear is that the logic of the federal party right now is to have a left-wing leader. You have six seats in the House of Commons, Carney moving so far right. It just makes sense to have a left-wing leader as NDP in that position. And also, when you bring in the fact that you have this 2.5 year genocide in Gaza, when you bring in the fact that there's been this historic international solidarity movement, and then Israel going and attacking Iran and Lebanon over the past month, the energy and mobilization in that direction is there. And front page of the National Post, I think it was today's paper, I just read a few of them today, and it was all about the third worldists who have taken over the NDP. And it's obviously an exaggeration, but there is a important truth in there, which is we're seeing in many places around the world, the sort of imperial center, we're seeing the developing of politicians or movements that come out of all this, Palestine solidarity activism that's at the center of influencing, be it Mamdani, be it, I think Polanski's his name, the green politician in the UK, France Insoumise in France. You see this playing out kind of all over, and so yeah, that activism, is, I guess, channeling its way through the political system.
Well, I got to admit, I haven't heard the term third worldists, but I don't read the National Post because I find them to be third world warists myself. Well, how about even the backroom battle at the NDP? Did any of your allies gain entrance through the vaunted doorway?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We had about I don't know, the Socialist Caucus people around my campaign. It was about 15 to 20, depending on how you identify the delegates. And they, I wasn't inside. They rescinded my membership in the party, so I
Well, and
wasn't.
they called the police on you too, as I read.
And
So.
then on the Sunday after, on the Friday and Saturday, I was there in the space, kind of like the bottom of the stairs of where the main room was, and people had to kind of pass by, and there was no problem Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Suddenly Sunday morning, which was the big media day when they were announcing the new leader, suddenly they said I had to be removed. In fact, it was actually so aggressive that somebody from our campaign, who I guess kind of looks like me from behind, he was going up the escalators early in the morning, and the head of security came up to him and said, "You have to leave. You're Eve Engler. You have to leave." And he's like, "Well, first of all," he actually was a delegate, "and I'm not." He's like, "I'm not Eve." And then when I came about 20, 30 minutes later into the building, they did the same thing to me. We stood up to them. We refused, and it actually was kind of an embarrassing. They called the cops. There was like five cops there, but they buckled under our refusal to just adhere to their demands to leave. But yeah, we had people inside, and they got to the mic many times, and they had our platform, "Capitalism Can't Be Fixed, Onward to a Socialist Future," and they did a very good job of interjecting and having about four or five people behind the person speaking with the platform, so everyone on the big screen could see the platform. I saw clips of it. It looked like it went off very well, and everyone's report said that. We moved and brought about 300 of the platforms to the convention, and every single one of them was taken, and people would come up where I was. We had a banner, "Big Capitalism Can't Be Fixed," banner, and different materials, and people were coming up all the way through. It was kind of a fascinating dynamic on a bit of a personal level, in that there was tons of hostility. All these people, particularly in the Avi camp, tons of hostility towards me, just like really like kind of aggressive like looks and stuff like that. And then there was all these people who would, probably towards like 50 people over the weekend, who came up wanting to take like selfies and stuff like that. So it was this weird mix of like lots of hostility from what I took as anyone with any kind of like establishment NDP kind of tie, and then lots of, kind of young, mostly younger, just sort of members of the party, local activists who had a who were, sympathetic. And that's kind of what people said about the campaign inside, which was that there was a they didn't win any votes. We didn't win any votes or anything like that, but there was lots of openness and interest in reading the platform, and people were very supportive of the interventions that Jasmine Pearden, specifically the co-policy lead and who ran for president of the party, made.
And did you get any reports of other bald-headed men being asked to take selfies in their mistaken identity?
I didn't get that, but yeah.
The League of Bald-Headed Voters. But how about, I mean, yeah, getting in the front door, but how about getting in the back door, into the back room? Was there any of your camp that got elected into the machinery, pulling the levers of the NDP?
No, and in fact, they did very. Jasmine only got 4% of the vote running
Oh.
for president, and that's actually quite bad for a socialist caucus in the past. But what was different this time is it was a very close race between the Avi candidate and the establishment candidate. So anyone who voted for Jasmine was like, understood they were kind of making a serious political statement, and to a certain extent throwing away their vote. And in fact, we were happy that the Avi candidate won, because it would have the margin was so close that the votes that Jasmine won could have actually led to the Avi candidate losing and then having the establishment people. And that's also go they blocked Barry Weisluder, who's been going to NDP conventions for 50 plus years. He was at the convention, Ontario convention, in September. They denied him access to the convention. They pulled some shenanigans to try to avoid him being able to register. And then once he was able to register, then they blocked him from participating. And this is, again, this is first time in 50 plus years. And what happened, I think, is that our campaign, we polarized. We actually were threatening to the, it polarized everything. It was they took it very seriously in the establishment, and so they came down with this, like, more repressive than they've been in the past. So in the past, Socialist Caucus has been there, allowed to operate, sometimes gotten 12, 15, 20% of a vote, but was always understood as kind of like not threatening, because they didn't really have a serious candidate or a serious campaign. And it was just sort of like, okay, some people will vote for the Socialist Caucus people as a sort of protest, because they're not the, that's the only alternative to the establishment person. But it was never sort of viewed as a threat. Our campaign, I think what we did was we were viewed as a threat early on, especially we polarized things, and so they became more repressive. But yeah, so I think that the fact that Avi wins, the fact that we were able to expose the undemocratic vetting process, the backroom nature of the party, and also the imperialist nature and the pro-militarist nature. I mean, Avi's been facing a lot of criticism, a lot of pressure from the left on international affairs, and that's almost entirely due to our campaign. And so some of the rhetoric that we're seeing from him, I think, has been influenced by those efforts.
Well, even so, I couldn't bring myself to put him on the number one on my ballot. And I did join, like, as you mentioned, people joining the party for your campaign. I was one of those. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Angler. Eve's an activist, journalist, and author of countless articles and essays detailing the foreign policy of this country, Canada. He's written a dozen books on the subject, including Stand on Guard for Whom? A People's History of the Canadian Military, House of Mirrors, Justin Trudeau's Foreign Policy, Left Right, Marching to the Beat of Imperial Canada. His latest is Canada's Long long fight against democracy. Well, Eve, is there any indication that there's going to be an accounting for these draconian actions of the party apparatchik during your campaign against you and against others, as you describe people being denied in the social in the socialist caucus, being denied access and so on?
There is no, I mean, the rhetoric of all of the candidates was we've got to be more power to the riding associations, which implicitly means weakening the vetting process, because now you have to basically be vetted in by the central office to be even able to run locally, right? So the power of the riding associations is completely diminished when they can't be the one selecting who's going to run in their riding. So that's, you know, one of the different elements of weakening the local associations, which is very important because it means that they're not activist hubs in any way. They're just really campaign bodies for the central party. I don't know. I mean, I was on the flight back. Libby Davies, who was elected as vice president on the Avi ticket, a former Vancouver East MP, who's viewed as sort of the left of the party. She was on the flight with me alongside Kim Elliott, her partner, who's the head of rabble.ca, which I've written for a lot, many times over the years, though they're, I think, much less inclined to receive my pieces over the past 8 months. They were just completely hostile. They didn't want to like recognize me saying hi to them on the walking by them on the plane. So I don't know how, you know, where that's at. I think these people would say they're against excluding Barry Weisler from the convention. They would say they think I should have had the right to run in the race. But there really is this, I would say it's almost cult-like dynamic that plays out within the NDP. And, you know, if I'm not reinstated as a member, that doesn't in any way bother me. I do think it would be better for the left in this country to have an NDP where the riding associations are as close to activist hubs as possible, or at minimum where they have the right to select who they want to run in their riding, maybe with some sort of minimal vetting process, but very much a minimal process. I don't think that Avi Lewis is going to, even if they don't change the vetting process, I don't think he's going to block, you know, someone like a Paul Manley from running, which the, you know, Thomas Mulcair's NDP blocked, because that would just be too embarrassing. So I don't think they'd be blocking pro-Palestinian candidates the same way they've done in the past. But it's just in and of itself, it's a damaging process, and it's really an attack against democracy, not just, you know, like Canadian democracy broadly, not just NDP democracy. So I think that needs to happen. I'm not that trusting of the people who've you know, I think they're better than the party brass has been in power, but do they really care about changing the structure of the party now that their person is in charge of it? I'm skeptical of how far. I mean, you know, someone like Libby Davies, she voted to bomb Libya twice. Mm-hmm. And I, as far as I understand, she's never, you know, she was right next to Jack Layton in those years. And I don't think she's ever apologized for bombing Libya. I don't know if she even cares about what's happened to Libya over the past 15 years. So there's a political culture in the NDP that's, you know, it's very much aligned with Canadian imperialism. Yes, Palestine has become an issue that now galvanizes people. I think this horrible war on Iran and the killing in Lebanon has also, you know, has widespread opposition to that. What Trump's doing in Cuba, but are these people really into upending decades and decades of NDP backing of NATO war against Libya, against Yugoslavia, going along with Afghanistan for a big chunk of the time? Even right, you know, in recent weeks, the NDP defense critic was basically endorsing the defense industrial strategy and moving towards 5% of GDP. Are the these people, do they really care about, are they into fighting capitalism? Are they gonna just agree with or concede to the provincial, the Alberta NDP and the Saskatchewan NDP, who are openly ecocidal in their policies? I don't know. I think the only way it's gonna happen is if there's a lot of push from those who've joined the party to back Avi. And thus far, I'm seeing that the right is getting to set the agenda, and it's more sort of like just defensive, back, defend Avi from the right-wing criticism, which makes sense to a certain extent. But I think it'd be much better if we try to go on the offensive as well.
Well, you write in your article, if the Lewis leadership is to be successful, it will be because it broadens the parameters of the mainstream debate and unleashes activist momentum. It sounds to me, from everything you're saying, that the NDP hasn't learned its lesson. And for those that don't recall, and I forgive you for not remembering what happened a week ago because I feel that way myself. They got absolutely wiped out, and they're not even an official party anymore because they couldn't manage the seats to gain that status. They were all but destroyed. The only worse loss I can think of is when the Tories were taken down to a handful of seats way back when, after Mulroney's disastrous tenure here. But yeah, that doesn't sound like the lessons have been learned. Eve, you mentioned Palestine. I guess. And you talk about superstars in the NDP. Well, a superstar died yesterday, and it happens to be Avi Lewis's father, Stephen Lewis. I'm sure almost everybody listening knows a little bit, at least, about Stephen Lewis and about his life in politics. But he has a mantle that he may not deserve, and you have been critical of him, Stephen Lewis and the NDP's liberal imperialism, is an article that you wrote several years ago, 2019, that's been circulated as the hagiography has, in the wake of his death, has been everywhere else. You haven't flinched at all in your criticism of him. Can we judge the son by the father?
I would say partly. I would say the people who are out there online defending Avi by saying, "How dare Nenshi criticize him in Alberta or back in Saskatchewan, back in Saskatchewan, the NDP leader in Saskatchewan, and then now come out and talk about the passing of Stephen Lewis because Avi is just like his father." That's not what people on the left should be saying whatsoever. Because if Avi's just like his father, we got a problem, right? Let's not forget that his father becomes Brian Mulroney's ambassador to the UN. His father was a central player in kicking the waffle out of the NDP, i.e., the left, socialist, younger kind of movement in the early 1970s. I would venture to guess, or I would my framing is that Avi would generally be to the left of his father. Now, the times were different, so his father may have been more socialistic even than Avi is today, but that the whole parameter discussion was much to the left. But his father represented a very establishment. He was the leader of the Ontario NDP for 8 years. And I don't think it's a mistake that Mark Carney has put out a statement celebrating Stephen Lewis, because Stephen Lewis is what he became really known for, was international affairs. And Stephen Lewis was a liberal imperialist. He backed the bombing of Libya in 2011. So, people like Geoffrey York, the Globe Mail correspondent for Africa, was like, Stephen Lewis was a great champion of Africa. Well, the African Union was aggressively opposed to the bombing of Libya that Stephen Lewis supported, right? Stephen Lewis supported the responsibility to protect, which was used to justify the coup in Haiti in 2004. Stephen Lewis, I did a whole section of him in my book, Left Right, Marching to the Beat of Imperial Canada, which was stimulated by when I was on tour for my book, Canada and Africa, 300 Years of Aid and Exploitation. I came across this article where Stephen Lewis, during the 2015 election, was complaining that Stephen Harper hadn't done enough for Africa, and enough for Africa is like, you just got to give more aid. Nothing about how Stephen Harper had backed Canadian mining companies in Africa, how back the bombing of Libya. The criticism was just give more aid, and we got to be more benevolent to Africa. While, and I remember this very clearly because it was an overnight bus in Nelson, BC. I spent the next 6 hours or so researching everything I could find on Stephen Lewis, it was this anger from reading him criticizing Harper not being more benevolent towards Africa. And when you look into Stephen Lewis's record on Africa, which is what he became known for, the AIDS and stuff, it was all this sort of like basically missionary, as people alluded. He's like a sort of David Livingstone, a 19th century liberal missionary. That's what Stephen Lewis was. And he got all kinds of kudos in the official Canadian media. So while he was leader of the NDP, he was sort of more criticized, was criticized from the left for expelling the waffle. And then obviously NDP leaders generally aren't celebrated too much in the dominant media. But once he goes to the international sphere, it's just like celebration, celebration. And this reflects this liberal imperialist ideology in our country that particularly manifests itself in Africa. And so Stephen Lewis is not somebody at all. That people on the left, certainly anybody calls them a bit anti-imperialist, should be celebrated. I could not find any criticism Stephen Lewis made of Canada's role in Africa from the Canadians who helped conquer the continent in the late 1800s, became governors, colonial governors in the early 1900s, to the Canada's role in giving weapons to the British and the French while they're suppressing independence movements in the 50s, to the huge Canadian mining industry exploiting all across the continent in recent decades. I couldn't find any criticism of that from Stephen Lewis. And again, his criticism was always, we didn't give more, we weren't more benevolent, more aid. Yes, he did a role. I think it's fair to say that Stephen Lewis, while ambassador, Mulroney's ambassador to the UN, he played a role, and an important role on the issue of apartheid South Africa. But let's also not mythologize that. Canada wasn't leading the charge against apartheid South Africa. The African countries, the Asian countries, Caribbean countries, they broke off diplomatic relations with apartheid South Africa years before Canada did this. What Canada did was it was ahead of the curve when it came to vis-a-vis the UK or the US or maybe France, right? That's what, leading the charge was, better than the other, European settler, white settler country. Obviously the communist bloc was also much better. So that's what, Stephen Lewis, maybe can be credited for. But at the same time, when he was ambassador to the UN, Stephen Lewis voted multiple times against Palestinian rights, right? He was the ambassador that upheld Brian Mulroney's anti-Palestinian policies at the UN. So, Stephen Lewis is this rhetoric we're seeing all over there. It's gross. I mean, honestly, and some of it. And Stephen Lewis was a staunch Zionist until right at the end, after it lost the 2020, Canada lost its 2020 vote in the Security Council. Stephen Lewis goes and claims it had nothing to do with Palestine, which was ridiculous. It was just, he's all these comments I've detailed many places about him, over the top, pro-genocidal, pro-Jewish supremacist kind of positions, until like right at the last minute. And so there's people online today, to the left, leftists today online, posting this image of Stephen Lewis at an anti-genocide rally from maybe 8 months, a year ago, as a sign that he was like, leading the charge. Well, the Lewis family, and give credit to Avi. Avi is better than his grandfather and his father on this, and his mother and his aunt Janet Solberg, they were the main anti-Palestinians within the NDP for decades and decades. And you have people today framing Stephen Lewis as having been some sort of in solidarity with Palestinians. It's an absolute inversion of the historic record and should be clearly denounced and challenged.
Well, something tells me we should have started with Stephen Lewis. We're out of time. Thanks a lot for coming on again, Eve?
Thanks for having me.
And you can find Eve Engler at eveengler.com. Thanks to Dan Kovalik. And, my last bon mot, Eve, is without Stephen Lewis, there could be no Bob Ray, perhaps. And that's something maybe we can talk about another time. Thanks again, Eve.
Thanks.
That's all I got for this week. Till the next time.